Oh my god, that intro. It is way too cool for me. This is... That's Dominique Foxworthy's voice. I haven't even introed the podcast or said what it's about, but you really felt the need to just...
I mean, I can't help it. That beat knocks. I was feeling it. It is not appropriate for you. It does not connote Mina Kimes when it comes on, but the beat knocks.
How so? How does it not connote me? Please spell it out for the listeners.
Well, Mina, that song sounds cool. And you are...
Super cool. Okay, yeah. Welcome everyone. This is Bootleg with Mina Kimes. This is my new podcast. I recorded a little intro you can go back and listen to. I kind of talked about who I am. If you're here, I assume you know who I am, unless you were maybe looking for a podcast about jeans, perhaps. What else is Bootleg? Bootleg is a good title because this has been pretty janky, as you can tell from the introduction and also from the fact that I've tweeted out the wrong link to this like 20 times. But I promise it's going to post every Thursday starting this Thursday. We're going to talk. I'm going to be joined by a different guest, not always Dominique. Hopefully you'll come back a lot, Dominique.
I'll be back. I'm upset that you got other guests, but I'll be back.
We're just going to talk about... the upcoming weekend in the NFL, I'll go through some of the games that I find interesting, some of the players, some of the matchups, and just stories that I want to get into. I get to choose them, Dominique. We did a podcast last year called The Nickel Package. And
yep. Minority Thursdays or Wednesdays. Was it Minority Wednesdays?
It was Minority Thursdays,
I
believe.
Okay, that's what I thought.
What do you think of the name of my podcast? Do you like it?
The name of this podcast?
Yeah, Bootleg.
What do I think of it?
Yeah, do you think it's cool?
Do I think it's cool? No, I think it's cool. I was just trying to make you uncomfortable by making you think that I think it's whack. The name is cool.
Mission
Who cares what it sounds like? Who cares what it sounds like? If it's good, it's good. And I know it
would
be good.
I went through a few names. Okay. So right, I considered Man Coverage. I thought that was kind of cheeky. Get it? Because I'm a woman.
I get it.
Man,
it's a good one.
Man coverage. The other name I thought of that I was told was inappropriate was Exotic Smash Mouth.
How could that be inappropriate? It's not inappropriate.
I guess I'm allowed to use the word exotic in a certain kind of, I don't know. This is a place we don't want to go down. Smash Mouth also.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, hit me.
I am aware that there will be other guests on the show. I am... I won't say that I'm happy about it, but I am.
You were talking about it like somebody who's in an open relationship and doesn't want to be in an open relationship.
I mean, I'm aware that this is something that you need in your life. I'm not going to say that I agree with it or I understand it, but I'm aware. But I would like to, at some point, we need to introduce some sort of grading process so we can determine who the best guest is. Because I'm going to go ahead and say that I need to be the top of that list. I will compete with all your other guests. They should be compared to me. I'm the benchmark guest.
Well, here's the thing. Okay, if you're listening and you haven't already rate and review, please rate and review. But please tell us who the best guest is. And I'll tell Dominique if it's him, and I will definitely tell him if it's not him. Well, you're the first guest, which I feel like should be a major compliment.
So I'm the best and the worst because right now.
I also knew you would agree to do it. So let's get started. The first game I want to talk about, maybe not the most. First of all, we will talk about the Thursday night football game, but I want to talk about it at the end, just in case people are listening to this, over the course of the weekend. They don't want to sit through it since it's already happened, and obviously it's a very exciting matchup. But I want to talk about a game that I think is also interesting, mainly because I really want to talk about, well, both the quarterbacks, but in particular one of the quarterbacks, and that is Josh Allen. So let's start with Bills at Packers. So Josh Allen... Hall of Fame or just a multiple Pro Bowler, All Pro? Like, what are we talking here? Hall of Fame, right?
Yeah, obviously, anytime you accomplish a 6'6" white hurdle in the middle of the field, immediately go straight to the Hall of Fame in my book. No, but he's to be fair, he's better than I thought. Right?
What does a white hurdle sound like? No, don't answer that question. It's too early in the podcast for me to get in trouble. in the existence of the podcast. Look, I am relentlessly amused by the idea of Josh Allen being great simply because just about every NFL writer and analyst, not all of them, but, and I clearly belong to this group, will have to eat crow Okay, because you can look it up. We did. You and I did a draft show together, and the world saw me react very moderately, I think. Very tempered reaction to the drafting of Josh Allen at number 7. I'm just going to be straight up. I did not think – I thought he had a very high upside. I thought he was extremely, you know, high variance, could go either way type of pick, low floor, high ceiling. I did not think – he would look as good as he looked in this game. And I went back and watched it as people were taunting me in my mentions and telling me to eat that crow. I didn't think he would be this good because I went back and he wasn't incredible. And we can talk about that in a second, but he was a competent NFL quarterback. And I don't think I even thought that was possible at this point in his career.
I think anyone asking you to eat crow, it's too aggressive. Slow down. You can put the knife and fork away. I think that I am surprised he's better than I thought, but you mentioned he wasn't that good in the game. Like, he played okay.
Well, he was good. He wasn't great. That's how I feel. What did you think? Cause what we're referring to, I mean, basically, you know, the hurdle went viral for good reasons.
Fantastic.
Phenomenal. The Wordle, the white hurdle. But, you know,
very stupid. It was a sign of not great quarterback decision making, but it was beautiful.
I remember Todd Gurley hurdled a dude, like, I want to say it was maybe 2 seasons ago, maybe last season, and it went viral. And I don't think he lost yardage on the play, but it was maybe a 3-yard gain, and he absolutely shouldn't have hurdled him. But people were like, oh my God. So it always do the hurdle if you want to be on SportsCenter. And Josh Allen, by the way, I will say I did believe he was tremendously athletic coming out of the draft. So that actually, the hurdle and the you know, running for yards, none of that was that surprising to me. But most of this game was, you know, short passes with a lot of yards after the catch. I think the most 70% of the yards were after the catch, right? Which, yeah, his passing yards, which
is 196 passing yards were not a lot after the catch. And I think Brett Hundley is the closest guy from last season was 55%, so it's not great company.
And, you know, he did have a couple of deep passes. I would attribute both of those, as I recall, to blown coverages, but that's not Josh Allen's fault, right? He didn't make the Vikings defense blow coverage, so that Chris Ivory was wide open, I think, on that one play, and another one was Charles Clay, as I recall, was just wide open. But that's, you can't pin that on Josh Allen. All it just means is that we don't actually know whether he can make those difficult passes yet.
Yeah, I think the big revelation for me, if we can call it that, out of this game is that Josh Allen, in my mind, moved from he's going to be a bad quarterback to let's see. Like, he's upgraded to let's see mode for me, because what he did last week was good, but it's not in tough situations. And in his defense, there's not a lot of support there. The coach there has not shown any ability to work well with quarterbacks. They don't have receivers. Their best running back was injured. And it's not a great situation necessarily for a young quarterback. So there's plenty to be excited about, or plenty of ways to explain away if Josh Allen doesn't play well going forward. But I'm surprised that he played as well as he did. I didn't think that given the fact that all the NFL writers have been talking about before last year's draft was how he wasn't all conference in the Mountain West, how his completion percentage in high school was pretty terrible, and he just hasn't necessarily had a history of being a consistently competent quarterback at any level. So why would he get at the top level and all of a sudden turn into one?
Yeah, I don't think anything about this was necessarily indicative of future performance. Like, he had a bunch of fumbles that they recovered. That's not going to keep happening, right? He threw passes that should have been intercepted. He also threw a couple of really pretty deep balls that should have been caught. So, you know, it's one of those things where the sample size is so small at this point. And you're right, the team around him, I think that is probably the most consistent thing. And that is what we can use to project his performance going forward. This is still a very bad offensive line that he was able to run behind it, and he got out, he escaped pressure pretty well behind it, you know, what continues to be very porous protection, to his credit. But the defense really impressed me, Dominique, the Bills defense, which last year they kind of skied. What is the expression? Do you ski? I've never been skiing in my life. I'm not a white hurdler.
I don't know what impression you're going for. They skied what?
You ski past your tips? You ski over your tips. When you're better than, when you like do better than you actually are, you know?
I'll kick your coverage. It's a football show.
That's such like a gross phrase. Okay, but he skied past his tips. I don't know.
Kicking
he did something,
gross?
but the, or not him, the defense. So the defense last year was a, it was a bit of a mirage, right? They weren't as, they got lucky a lot. And I think in this game, they also did get lucky a little bit. Although Jerry Hughes, who is what, 40, 50 at this point? 52, 53 years old? I don't know his age. I'm just spitballing. I think it's around there. He was phenomenal. He absolutely owned Riley Reiff on the, but outside there. But I don't think that's going to keep happening. The turnovers aren't all going to go their way. But is it possible at this point to argue the Bills might not be, as a lot of people thought, you know, after the first 2 weeks, the worst team in football?
That's possible. So that, I think that is one thing that that there's worth that's worth talking about, is that they may be better than we thought. Because I remember after the first couple of weeks, I am guilty of this also, of sending out tweets or saying that that team should pay the Bills to come play them, talking about them like they were one of those directional schools. Like, I was going for all the jokes, and they are not a terrible, terrible team. And then the Vontae Davis situation last week made it even, made it look even worse, that it was such an untenable situation that the players right. don't even want to be there. And so they were just the butt of so many jokes. So I'm happy for what they did in this game for them, but I don't think that this means that they are suddenly going to be a playoff contender. This team still isn't very good, and that quarterback we still aren't sure about.
Yeah, and I don't expect, the line in this game, the Packers game, is something like 10.5 in favor of Green Bay, which seems pretty disrespectful to me, given that Green Bay hasn't been that good. But I still think the Packers are going to win. I'm not as enthused about to talk about Green Bay at this point, especially last week was a little bit fluky in Washington with the rain. It was just so disgusting, and they've had a lot of injuries. Brian Bulaga went out, the right tackle, and was replaced by Jason Spriggs. It was awful, and we, I think at this point, can safely say Aaron Rodgers isn't 100% himself.
Yeah, he's not, and he doesn't look like he will be anytime soon, because he's playing on it. And his style of play, I mean, it's changed some, but he still is moving around, and he's trying to get rid of the ball a little quicker, but his style of play is his style of play, and he's going to continue to be that athletic quarterback. He still is able to make accurate passes, but I think that that injury with Aaron Rodgers hurt them. They are no longer a legitimate Super Bowl contender in my mind. Once Aaron Rodgers is no longer healthy, like
week three, can't see them with the take.
Yeah. Get in here with these hot takes. I got to be the best guest. Best guest comes with the hottest takes.
Relax. Do you know Aaron Rodgers is a 1.6%, career interception rate, which is just absolutely. I wanted to look up Ryan Fitzpatrick's the other day to mount an argument for why he's not the future of the Bucks, who we'll talk about next. But that's insane. That's just absolutely insane. I kind of didn't want him to play last week on FedEx Field because it's, you know, it's rainy and that field is so gross. And it's kind of ironic, by the way, that the NFL is a multi-billion-dollar enterprise. And they purport to be so concerned about quarterbacks that they won't let them get hit. And yet they'll let Aaron Rodgers trot out onto that field. Yeah.
Is it just too
insane.
Expensive? Like, it's not just the Washington is particularly bad, but there are plenty of cities that I've played in and that they have fields now that just aren't very good. I don't know. I'm not a horticulturist. I don't know who takes care of grass, a grassiologist.
Sod man.
Yeah, I'm
that
not. So I don't know. Maybe
sound right.
Maybe it's just hard to do. I know in Atlanta, they like roll the grass out and roll it back in. I think Tennessee, they do that also. In Arizona, maybe. No, Arizona.
Turf
Arizona,
master?
They roll it out. I don't know what it is, but it's really, apparently it's really hard to keep up that type of grass, and protect the players. But you're right. It's not safe for a guy like Aaron Rodgers to play on that.
But before we get out of this game, I did want to ask you. So the Packers have kind of been at the center of a lot of the roughing the passer controversy from the first few weeks with Clay Matthews. It bothers me when everyone criticizes, and I want to preface by saying that a lot of these calls have been terrible and very, from a fan's perspective, they suck. Okay. So I'm not pro the way it's being enforced and whatever, but the rule exists. The NFL is doing this for a reason. I don't think it's safety. I think it's because they want the most valuable players in the NFL, the quarterbacks, like Aaron Rodgers, who was hurt last year, you know, by Anthony Barr. And that's sort of what precipitated this rule. They want them on the field for ratings, entertainment, et cetera. My question to you is, do you think, then you get into the sort of cost benefit calculation. Is it worth it to, I guess, prevent maybe that once in a season injury to have this number of bad calls?
Yeah, I don't know. So I think the overreaction that the NFL clearly overreacted. But the NFL is, as many people believe, the NFL is about sports. And I and you and a lot of people close to the business, I think, understand that this is an entertainment property that happens to use the vehicle of sport. So the most important thing for a television show or a movie is that the star is there. You showed up to see Mission Impossible and Tom Cruise wasn't playing Tom Cruise's character, whatever, Ethan Hunt, you'd be disappointed. And I think that's the same feeling that they have about these NFL games. So the question is, how much is this actually, these bad calls actually hurting things? So I am a casual fan. I don't have a team. And I have to be honest with you, the bad calls are a thing to talk about, but the Monday night game, which had a ton of bad calls,
yes,
still enjoyed it. We still got to the fourth quarter. We still had a one score game and I was rooting for Fitzmagic. Like, it was still a fun thing. I'm not sure that I still think it's a stupid overreaction. Because it was one injury, essentially, that they tried to change this. And the same thing could be said about the Tom Brady ACL tear when they said you can't hit low. Then one injury of Aaron Rodgers having his collarbone broken, you're like, all right, well, now you can't land on guys. So it's still an overreaction, but I'm not sure that if they do the cost-benefit analysis that they don't end up saying, fine, I'm okay with people complaining about the calls as long as that once every decade injury, whatever, doesn't happen to our protagonist.
Yeah, it's one of those things where – in terms of the roughing passer controversy in our world, this amounts to a controversy. I can't tell if it's like, oh, if it's in the sort of sense of scandal and panic is inflated by Twitter and inflated by the fact that we are professional debaters and, love to turn molehills into mountains. I'm sure it's not helped by the fact that we're on TV talking about it so much, right? And that it is kind of, I think it's pretty much been one of the, next to like Mahomes and some of these quarterbacks, probably the second biggest story of the season so far, but maybe it's not that big of a deal. I don't know. And the NFL has talked about, some of the executives have come apparently complained about it. So maybe they'll dial it back a little bit like they do, like they've done with the helmet rule, right? Where that seemed like this panic situation in preseason and they basically haven't called it at all. Or, in playoffs when you're in the Super Bowl, when the refs kind of hold back their whistles a little bit. I don't know. I think that's something that could happen, but we'll see. I don't know. To me, it does, they need to dial it back a little bit, but I agree with you that it's probably a bit overblown. I want to talk about another team in the NFC North that might be the best team in the NFC North. I don't think they are, but.
It's a quick walk back.
Scoreboard says so. And that's the Bears. Okay. Yeah. And so they're playing the Bucs this week and we'll talk about the Bucs and what they're doing with the quarterback situation. It might be announced by the time this comes out. I think it's pretty clear they're going to go with Fitz, but I want to talk about the Bears quarterback situation because I've found it to be very disheartening through the first 3 weeks. We talked about Josh Allen, sort of, I don't want to say shattering expectations, but clearing a very low bar. I also had a low bar for Mitch Trubisky, and he has come under it for me. I guess watching this Bears offense, it's so frustrating because Matt Nagy, the new head coach who came from Andy Reid under the Chiefs and does a lot of the fun, exciting college things that you and I like, puts him in such positions to succeed, and he fails him after like the first few scripted drives every game. And I, at this point, I'm really starting to worry about him, I guess, and the future of the Bears with him.
I mean, it's unfortunate because they do have a really good roster, I think, otherwise outside of him. They have a playoff and competitive roster. But I do agree with you is that his accuracy is really a problem. His decision making hasn't been great. And I don't know what more a Nagy can do than scheme people wide open. You have to hit him, which he does sometimes, and then sometimes he doesn't, because it doesn't seem that he necessarily can sit him in the pocket and let him, I guess, do a Tom Brady impersonation, which, to be fair, not very many people can do that, but I don't know that he can do that in any spurts. Like, it seems like most quarterbacks can do that for a little bit. You can't put the whole offense on him, and he can't hit open receivers when you scheme him open. So it seems like he may not be the future of that team, or he should not be the future of that team.
And it's still early, so I don't, I'm a little bit, I guess, apprehensive of making this call right now, especially given at UNC, he was he was regarded as a super smart quarterback, right? Like a lot of the praise for him was, oh, he can really work through his reads and his vision is incredible, which have been his biggest failings, I think, so far this season. If the first read's not there, he's tucking and running. Okay. And that's not who he was purportedly. I didn't watch that much UNC, I'm not going to lie, as a college quarterback. But it's disheartening at this point, especially given that this is currently statistically the best defense in the NFL. And while I don't think Khalil Mack is going to be able to sustain the pace of what he's been doing, I don't see any reason for this defense to really drop off. I think they're probably going to finish as a top five defense.
Yeah. I mean, this leads me to wonder a bit about like how the incentives have changed with the most recent CBA to how beneficial it is to have a rookie quarterback. Like, it seems like that is the recipe that everyone wants to follow, that kind of recipe that was first introduced by your beloved Seattle Seahawks, was kind of like you get a young cost control quarterback and then you spend money elsewhere. So there is great incentive to draft a quarterback in the first round and hope that he's okay.
Yes.
And I think that it sometimes gets quarterbacks pushed higher in the draft or pushed into the first round so that you can get the fifth year option when I don't know that they necessarily deserve it. And this might be a bit of a reach on Trubisky. Maybe Trubisky would have been a first rounder no matter what, but I do think that teams are more likely to take a chance on a quarterback early because they don't believe that, because it's not the same commitment financially in the past. And I think Trubisky is going to get this whole season and probably another season. So I think he's there to stay. So I don't know. I agree with you on the Nagy stuff. He's a great coordinator, and I'm not sure that Trubisky is the best tool to implement his offense.
Your point about team building is really good, and it's what makes me worried about the Khalil Mack trade now, Dominic. Because, right, you know, when it happened, everyone was like, oh, man, what a steal. You know, you get
not
a generational
everyone.
Player.
Not everyone.
Well, and on some level, I agree with that, right? Like, he is, I believe, a transcendent generational player. But they're paying him. They gave up a ton, and they're also paying him so much money. And the, I guess, sustainability of that from a team building perspective is predicated on what you just described, which is the idea that you're going to have this cheap rookie quarterback for a few years. But what happens if the rookie quarterback's not good, right? Because you don't have the cap space to go elsewhere at this point. So,
and also you gave away your first round picks that you might use.
So you're not going to get another quarterback,
another rookie quarterback.
Yeah. Sorry. Finished your thought as you.
You know, that's fine. It works. We work together for a while. Sometimes we finish each other's thoughts, podcast. Is what you were supposed to say right there. But I do believe
seamless
that
chemistry.
I don't know. I've said at the beginning. Now I'm not going to go out there and say that I said that that I thought that that Oakland won the trade. But I understood what they were doing because it seems like what they did was they had Khalil Mack and they had Carr under first round cost control contracts. That was the time when that was their window. That's when you fill out a team around them and that's when you make a run because you have these two franchise level players, arguably, at least they were playing that well on both sides of the ball. You fill out the rest of the team right then and you go for it. Once it's time to pay the quarterback, then you have to transition. You don't then also pay Khalil Mack on the other side of the ball. I think the smart move at this point is you go into a rebuilding phase, and I'm not sure that Carr even looks like, and then you could blame this on a lot of things, but I'm not even sure that Carr looks like that type of player anymore now. So I don't think that this was a bad move for them. They're in a rebuilding phase, whether fans want to believe it or not. So having a standout player on the defensive side of the ball, I don't know is a smart move if you could get two first round picks for it.
A little bit later, but I guess my only quibble with that, and I agree with you, the problem is John Gruden. Because trust him to use those picks, right? And that's the only, you know, I think if it was in a different franchise, perhaps with a new GM, you know, I would agree that, okay, you're committed to rebuilding. And he's been very clear about that ever since he came in the building. He basically looked at the roster and said publicly, this is trash. Reggie McKenzie, this is trash. Everything is bad. This is terrible. But we'll talk about the Raiders later because I want to talk about that game. But, you know, from that team building perspective and making decisions about quarterbacks, I think the Bucs, who are on the other side of the ball in this game, are in a very unique and confusing position. Okay. Because, like I said earlier, they're probably going to go with Ryan Fitzpatrick by the time this comes out, or you know, will soon decide that he's going to start in this game. I'm not necessarily opposed to that because it's so obvious that they can't put Jameis Winston right now from not only a sort of perspective, fan, optical outside, whatever external standpoint, but Ryan Fitzpatrick is so clearly beloved by this team right now. I don't know if you saw after the game, all of the wide receivers, Deshaun, who lends him his clothes, Mike Evans coming out and saying, oh, Ryan led us back. It was our fault. I had drops. Like wide receivers saying, oh, that was on me and my drops, not Ryan. That really tells you something. So I just feel like they can't immediately move on from him, but there's a nice transition point for him with this game, which I think he's going to struggle because he does struggle when he faces a pass rush, as we saw in the last game, and he's about to go against Khalil Mack, okay? But then you get the bye, and then I think if they lose this game, it gives them an easy transition point to go to Jameis, which I think you and I agree that something that they clearly have to do.
Yeah, I think they have to go to Jameis at some point. I think Dirk Cutter, in part, owes his job to Jameis Winston. Like, Dirk Cutter was the offensive coordinator. He was promoted to head coach, in part, because they believed that Jameis Winston was going to be the future, and Jameis Winston and him work well together. So I think that everyone wants that to happen, except for it sounds like the receivers and obviously Fitzpatrick. But I do think that Fitzpatrick played well in the second half against pressure. I think he had 2 touchdowns and was like 8 of 9 or something for more than 100 yards. So he has the ability to play well against pressure. But the question is, do you want to take this small sample size and all of a sudden believe that somehow he is a different quarterback than he has been in the past? And I think that's risky to do with a 37-year-old guy. As a person who was almost, I felt like I was alone on Romo Island back when Dak was a rookie starter and he was taking the league by storm. And I was saying, when Romo is healthy, you need to get Romo back out there because Romo is better. Like, this seems like that same situation, but kind of in reverse, where they're like, you got the hot hand, got to ride this hot hand. That just doesn't seem like a smart formula or a well-thought-out formula for the long-term health of this organization.
Ryan Fitzpatrick is the hot young thing in this analogy, which is funny. But yeah, you know, you're right. I mean, Jameis Winston statistically, by almost any measure, has been better than Ryan Fitzpatrick. He also did get better last season, contrary to public opinion. He had a 4 or 5 game stretch there after his injury, which he was actually quite good. I want to see him in Todd Monken, who has been fantastic, the new offensive coordinator. I want to see him in his offense, right? And I think the Bucs do too. Now, look, if they want to move on from him for every other reason, totally valid, okay? Like, if they don't want Jameis Winston to be the future of the franchise because of who he is as a person and what he's done off the field over, you know, the last few years, go ahead. But just from a purely football perspective, I don't think that they have enough information to make that decision right now.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's fine. I obviously agree with you. Like, if you want to move on from him, I think people who are in pro Jameis corners would say that his last infraction was 2 years ago, which for most people is nothing to celebrate. But sadly, in the history of Jameis Winston as a public figure, 2 years without an incident is a long time.
On that positive note, let's take a quick break. You can use the time to subscribe to this podcast. I don't know if you can do that while you're listening, or you pause it and subscribe or something, but please leave a rating and review. As I said in my introduction, my mom reads them all, so don't be weird. And we will come back and talk about a few more games, including tonight's Thursday night game, after the break. All right, we're back. Dominique, couldn't do this week without talking about the most thrilling matchup in football. Yes, that's right. Seahawks at Cardinals. Oh, yeah. Do you remember the 6-6 tie? What was that, 2016?
Oh, my gosh. Yes, I do remember that. That was terrible.
Whew. I needed a cigarette after. A thriller. That was when both kickers missed their field goals.
I'm a defensive player, and I did not enjoy that game.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, because as we talk about football and what's enjoyable, and I think that when we talk about the roughing the passer stuff and the quarterback stuff, that all plays into it. Typically, that just means offense, right? Close games and a ton of offense. Like, a game with incredible offense and 2 terrible defenses, you could really say the Chiefs-Steelers game, kind of like this, is regarded by most people as a good game. Is there, in your mind, like, do you think at this point in NFL fandom, people would ever call a low-scoring game a good game?
I don't. I think big plays and turnovers. You're not likely to have a lot of points, or you're more likely to have a lot of points if you have big plays, but I feel like that's what I enjoy. I enjoy like big pivotal plays and then suspense at the end. So if you can give me a couple deep throws that get intercepted, I'm elated, and some good returns. I like that. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just weird. I love interceptions. If I could watch a game full of interceptions, oh, I'm in.
You're not here for, you know, the big guys in the trenches, some stout run defense, the hog mollies. That's not
your answer. No, I'll pass on that. Are you? Is anybody? Like, even in football, even, I mean, this is probably a good segue into your beloved Seahawks. Talk about smash mouth football. Like, they are kind of a bit old school in their offensive approach.
Well, the defense, yeah. Oh, God, we could talk about the offense, but there's not a ton to say. The defense has been surprisingly good given how many injuries that they've had, right? They played a bunch of games without KJ Wright at this point, which is why they have, the ultimate NFL insider, Michael Kendricks, who is going to play this weekend. Earl Thomas, and that's what I want to talk to you about, by the way. So Earl Thomas has been playing, but he's like kind of been practicing, kind of not been practicing. Last week, he skipped practice, and there were a ton of trade rumors. We heard that the Chiefs were interested. Obviously, the Cowboys have been interested for a while. But nothing appears to be happening. Now, I've been pretty vocal about thinking that the team should not only keep Earl this year, but also extend him, right? 29-year-old safety. Safeties right now aren't making a ton of money. We don't know what he's asking for, okay? But in my mind, he is a Hall of Fame safety. The statistics, when he's on or off the field, speak for themselves. He is the identity of this defense. What do you think the team should do, however, sort of given, you know, what if he's asking for a ton of money? We don't know. I don't even think they've talked personally. But
so my question for you is, do you think that they are competitive? Because I think that's the question that comes down. That's the way that you look at all of these questions is like, do you think you're competitive, and when are you aiming to again be competitive if you don't think you're competitive? Because having Earl there is a nice thing to do that makes your team somewhat better, but I do not think that they are a Super Bowl contender. So I think if you're trying to sell tickets, and I don't know that people are showing up for Earl Thomas, but if you still want your team to be respectable, it's nice to have Earl Thomas around, but Earl Thomas is not going to remain in his prime the next time the Seattle Seahawks are a Super Bowl contender. So what are you paying for at this point if you extend Earl Thomas?
Well, that's a great question. And I think it cuts back to sort of the Khalil Mack quarterback. You know, when do you spend a lot of money on a defensive player, right? Because if you're not a Super Bowl competitor, like if you don't have the quarterback, and the Seattle does have their quarterback, which is why I'm okay with extending him, Dominique, because even if they're not super competitive this year, it shouldn't take that long with Russell Wilson. Like, maybe you sit a year out. Maybe you don't expect to win the division, you know, in 2019 or something. But you can't completely abandon the window while he's there. The other thing I'll say is, again, I don't know how much Earl Thomas wants. I know how much Rashad Jones and Eric Berry are getting paid. It's not Khalil Mack money. Okay, so we're talking maybe $13 million a year. If they could get, I don't know, 2 or 3 years guaranteed, that doesn't tank the team, I think, in a way that makes it untenable. So I'm with you, and a lot of people use that sort of rebuilding question or argument, I guess, to argue for trading Earl Thomas.
Right.
But my final thing is, you're not going to get that much in return, right, for him, to the point where, forget the extension aspect of it, the trade part also. They've said they don't want less than a third, but you're not going to find another Earl Thomas with a second, in my opinion. So,
yeah, but I mean, it's a lottery ticket, which is like, I guess you could say, let's be generous and say that Earl Thomas is worth a win this season, is worth at least one win. Do you think that is, you think he's worth more than that?
I think he's actually worth more than that.
Okay, let's say he's worth two wins this season. So, are those two wins more valuable than a lottery ticket, essentially, that you might find another late round, like Russell Wilson type player or another serviceable player that could help you going forward? So that, I mean, that's the question I think it boils down to. And then there's another dynamic that I think we're hesitant to talk about because we're not in these locker rooms and we don't understand it. You know, I don't believe in distractions necessarily, but I do believe that culture is important. Team culture is important. And I think that it's reasonable to argue that the way that he's been acting has can't be good for the team's culture. He hasn't shown
I did not expect this take from you. Respect.
It's not something that I necessarily believe or agree with, but I could understand a coach or a front office feeling like, what is this? What value is he bringing us? We're trying to rebuild this team. We're trying to rebuild a culture of whatever. And we have a guy here who's like, you know what? Practice. You want me to do that? Bleep that. I'm good. I'm going to go ahead and get two interceptions and shove this in your face. That has to make for a more difficult dynamic in Seattle.
Eh? I think you're right. Although I did love the quote, if I have a little headache, I'm not playing. Takes me back to my gym class days.
What? You didn't like gym? Who doesn't like phys ed?
You know, you'd think as a former player, I would have liked him, but I didn't. I think you're right, by the way. You know, the bit about, you know, him skipping practice and say, it's not a good look. And you're right that it's probably not good for the culture. He had like a weird little tiff with Bobby Wagner, right, last year, which led me to believe, and Bobby Wagner, I know that they view as the leader of the defense, rightfully so. By the way, he was incredible this week. He came back from injury and was fantastic against the Cowboys. So to me, it all just comes down to what is the dollar figure, right? As it always should be. It's so funny. We talk about these trades and these contracts and we have no idea how much any of this will cost. So yeah, if you're Eric money, no, but maybe Rashad Jones money, sure. You know, it's just, it's impossible to say without knowing.
So you
it does
think
look
that,
like he's going to be on the team. You think
he's such a good safety that he's worth two wins, and you think he doesn't want to be the highest paid safety in the game? I assume that's the money he's asking for.
I think highest paid safety in the game can mean a lot of things.
Okay. You think it's going to be a fluff contract? He could get away with a fluff contract with minimal guarantees?
I mean, God willing, right? But he's older than Eric Berry when he signed his deal. I think ideally it could be something with a higher, you know, APY, but lower guarantees. But who knows? The fact that they haven't even gone to the table would support the idea that he does want Eric Berry money, and if that's true, then I'll eat my words, because I don't think that's a good decision. I do think he's going to go into Arizona, which should be a win for Seattle, which would take them to 2-2. We're going to finally see Josh Rosen. We saw a little bit of him last week. I don't really think it's fair to judge him based on what happened. It was a terrible situation. Obviously, he was picked, threw a pretty terrible interception, but we don't know. Do you think they waited too long to make the change? The Cardinals, in terms of switching to Rosen?
No, I mean, I think what they did wasn't a great situation for him to start. They expected him to go do some Baker Mayfield-esque things, which he was not prepared to do, obviously. But I thought, and again, we'll go back to the pre-draft conversation about all these quarterbacks. He was the one that was most NFL ready, right? That was the one that everyone was saying. It's like, he has the mind like Aaron Rodgers.
Pocket presence.
Yeah, he has pocket
field.
Presence. He's accuracy.
Great mechanics.
Arm talent. Blah, blah, blah. Like, he was he was a guy that was most NFL ready. So, I expect him to continue with that and play well and be good. Like, I think that I liked him more than some of the quarterbacks that, particularly Josh Allen, some of the quarterbacks that went ahead of him, I liked him more than them. So I don't know that he, again, this is what happens though. Bad quarterbacks often go to bad situations. So he's not in a great situation. He has a great running back. That'll help, I guess. But I don't know.
Can you name, don't look, a non-Larry Fitzgerald wide receiver in the Cardinals? Or the tight end?
A non-Larry Fitzgerald.
I know you're Googling.
I'm not Googling. I would never lie to you. I know Brown is in Baltimore now. There might be another Brown there. They had two Browns, didn't they?
Nope, the other Brown's in Seattle now.
Oh, there's a Johnson or a Jackson, just because those are popular names. All right.
So, Christian Kirk, they drafted. I don't know if you remember him. And then something, Chad Williams?
JD
Nelson,
Williams.
Who's been there.
Chad
Williams. Anyways, I just say that to, bolster your point that it is a truly, truly atrocious situation. The defense should be better. They've actually not been as bad as, they haven't been that bad. And, you know, I think this is, we talked about situation and cycles with teams. This is clearly a rebuilding team, right? So for me, what I want to see out of this team is just, you know, I just want to see all the young guys playing, and I want to see a lot of Hassan Reddick. I want to see a lot of Buda Baker, you know, I like.
Buda.
Buda, he's been good. He's very good. I love that draft pick for them. So I think right now with the Cardinals, it's all about just kind of giving those guys a chance to develop. It's sad for Patrick Peterson and Larry Fitzgerald. This is how it's going to end, but it is not a good situation. You mentioned another guy who I actually think walked into a much better situation, and that is Baker Mayfield. Do you have Baker mania?
I got a touch of it. I don't think I need to go see the doctor yet, but I mean, I got some Baker symptoms. I enjoyed the game. I got excited. I was one who did not, who was shocked that Baker went number one overall and didn't necessarily like that as a pick, but,
shocked.
I was surprised. You weren't surprised that day. I remember we did a draft show together and I was like, what? He went number one? It really surprised me because he didn't fit the traditional thing. It's not because I didn't think he was good enough to go number one. It's because what I know of the NFL, the 6 foot, dual threat guy is not the guy who goes number one overall when there are able-bodied 6 foot, six quarterbacks there who have shown this pocket presence. So that was a surprise. Yes.
We're in the Browns Raiders game. I was surprised that he went number one. I didn't have the receipts, they're on the internet. You guys can go look. You can see me react to Josh Allen. And if Josh Allen does turn out to be fantastic, I will be forever owned by that moment. I own it. I was wrong. But I didn't, I liked Baker Mayfield a lot. So I was also very high on Sam Darnold. Okay. The Rosen, Darnold, Mayfield, I thought they were all pretty good.
Here we go,
to be honest,
with the Darnold take.
We're not talking about Sam Darnold today.
No, but I'm just tired of you in this pretending like you're the only one who thought Sam Darnold was going to be good. But anyway.
Well, I'm not proud of that right now. Baker Mayfield owned him last week. He was significantly better than him. He's also in a better situation. But, anyways, all of which is to say, I'm not surprised that he's good. I didn't expect him to look as good, right? Especially the situation he walked into right there, against what I think is a pretty good Jets defense that apparently didn't game plan for him, according to Jamal Adams, which is probably not a thing you should admit. Not great for the coaches to have that out there. But, you know, he looks good. I actually am just as excited, exhilarated by the Browns defense, what we've seen out of them so far. Holy smokes. By the way, while we talk about being wrong on draft, I was completely wrong on Denzel Ward. Not that I didn't like him or thought he wouldn't be a good NFL player, but I thought he was absolutely overdrafted. I thought they should have taken Bradley Chubb. I was 100% wrong.
Yeah.
He's phenomenal.
I thought they should have taken Bradley Chubb also, just because I feel like a reliable pass rush, you can put Bradley Chubb opposite, Garrett.
Miles Garrett.
Yeah, Miles Garrett. You can put him like that is to me something that you can build around. And we've talked about this in many of our past conversations is I like stacking positions. Like being good at one thing. Like we have a great defensive line, I think is good for him. So I think that was part of the reason why I did not love that pick, but I think you're right. I feel like I've betrayed the brotherhood of cornerbacks, but I am now all aboard on Denzel Ward. Ooh, that rhymes.
Well, and the Browns secondary, which gosh, the stats last year, I was looking at them earlier, it was really, really bad. But they've been really good, and part of the reason they've been good is because of that pass rush, right? So even though they didn't take Bradley Chubb, you mentioned Garrett, obviously he's just a beast. He's so good. But, he's imperfect, right? He still, I think, sometimes gets hit and run. He sometimes, I think, is a little bit soft against the run. Not enough to, I guess, I wouldn't call it a weakness of his.
Right.
But Larry Ogunjobi is incredible, has been incredible. So the Browns, you remember they traded Danny Shelton, who was a first round draft pick to the Patriots. Yeah. And just, you know, he didn't really fit into what they were trying to do under Greg Williams' scheme. And Larry Ogunjobi does. And just the amount of pressure he's been able to generate from the inside is, you know, to have that and have that coupled with Garrett is so valuable in the NFL right now. Emmanuel Ogba has also been very good. But so I think a lot of the secondary performance, we always talk about how, you know, the best friend of a secondary is a very good defensive line. And they've been really, 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 really good. So I don't know, all across the board, the Browns defense, I think right now they look like one of the 10 best defenses in the NFL.
Oh yeah, maybe higher. And I thought, I mean, I was high on them last year, which is embarrassing considering that they did not win any games, but I thought they were pretty talented last year. A lot of upgrades on offensive line and I was high on what they had on defense, but it's good to see it all finally coming together. While they haven't won any of these games, they probably should have won all the games that they played and they were at least in position to win. They only won one, but they were at least in position to win all these games, which is more than you can say for the Browns in previous seasons. So I also feel obligated to shout out Sashi Brown anytime we talk about the Browns, because it would seem that while he may not have picked all the best players, he set them up well to have a stacked roster.
And it's interesting how some of those draft picks now are starting to thrive as a result, not only of the new draft picks, but also some of the free agent pickups. I think of, you know, Demarius Randall, right, and putting him in at free safety, how that's allowed Jabril Peppers, who had an up-and-down season last year, to play more in the box, and he's better there, right? So I think it's like, I love it when a plan comes together, but unfortunately, you know, much of that plan was developed in the previous regime, but it does feel like all of these pieces under Greg Williams, it's all working right now. And that's a great, again, we talk about QB situations. It's a great situation for Baker Mayfield, who's pretty good at taking care of the football. I was surprised to see, Dominique, that their dogs 2.5 against the Raiders. Let me double check that. I mean, does that surprise you? Because I will say the Raiders aren't as bad as people have said there. And I think, you know, we're kind of piling on John Gruden. This is you really didn't think this podcast was going to be a defense of John Gruden, but here we are. are you a little bit surprised by that line?
Not necessarily. Like, I don't know that I would consider the Raiders should be favorites in that many games this season, but the Browns, the lines are not always based on who is good and who is not good. The lines are often based on betting trends. And, you know, people are not, they've won one game. People are not comfortable betting on the Browns just yet. So I don't know that I am surprised by that line. It pretty much says that those teams are close to even, which I think is probably pretty true.
I think we're going to hear a lot of, well, now that they've got tape on Baker Mayfield and time to prepare for him. How's that working out with Pat Mahomes, guys? No, I do think Baker Mayfield is a little bit, it's a little bit of a different situation.
Do you think that, that Todd Haley is the right coordinator for Baker going forward? Because I think what made Baker great in college and why Baker, I think, will be a good player for the future of the NFL is he is kind of a college-style quarterback. And he's the best version of it because he takes care of the ball and he is not unafraid to take shots down the field. But he's a college-style quarterback. And I guess when I think of Haley, I don't think of college-style offense necessarily.
Based on what we saw in his first performance, I think so. I actually do think it's a good fit. Look, Baker Mayfield, yeah, he's a college-style quarterback. He's also incredibly accurate. Okay. Yeah. And that was the biggest compliment you could pay him. It's funny because we talked about him coming out of college. Oh, he's so exciting. And, you know, he makes moves, you know, makes throws on his feet and he's always keeping the play alive. But he's also just like a very good rhythm passer who's very good at, just threading the needle. And you saw that a little bit. And so I do think he'll be fine. And I think he'll be especially fine against this Raiders defense that, yes, does have the worst pass rush in the NFL. I don't anticipate that changing anytime soon. I think the whole team is not as bad as people think. You know, they've blown it. I think they've actually blown a fourth quarter lead in every game, at least two of the three. So, you know, I don't think that they're completely untalented across the roster. We are seeing, I think the secondary has been a little bit better than expected with DRC and Garian Conley coming out. But, they're not going to be able to get that much pressure on Baker, which is why I actually did pick the Browns to win this game.
Going out on a limb, going with Browns back-to-back wins. I know we've got all the stats about how long it's been since they had a win. Do we have stats on how long it's been since they've had back-to-back wins like that? You're attempting fate. You're going against the football gods to suggest that the Cleveland Browns will win back-to-back games.
What do you think?
I mean, it's a coin toss. I'll go the other way just because you're going with the Browns and say that the Raiders will pull one out. Because you're right. They've been close. Here we go. I'm going to jump into full-on nonsense ESPN gas bag
of
cliche mode and say, see, the Browns just don't know how to win at end of games. They figured out one last week against the Jets because the Jets also don't know how to win. So I'm going to say the Browns still don't know how to win. And I guess I'm saying that the Raiders do. I don't know. John Gruden, Super Bowl champion. He knows how to win.
And that defense did. It's funny. I went back and watched some of the Miami game. I mean, they just gave up a couple of really bad explosive plays near the end there. And, you know, whether that's, I know you were joking about the don't know how to win, right? But when we say don't know how to win, sometimes that can refer to consistency, I think, at the end of the game. That can refer to conditioning. That can refer to mental errors in the end, which Derek Carr is responsible for some of that as well. But you know, there are a couple things where if it happens a few times, it does become a trend. You do, while again, it's a cliche.
Yeah.
There's a reason why it's cliche. And should, I think we're seeing that with this team.
We should break down all the football cliches and explain what they actually mean. Because I don't think that they are hollow. I think they actually do mean something.
Yeah.
It's just a lazy way rather than doing some actual, analysis saying they don't know how to win. It's just a lazy way. But I think that a lot of those cliches actually do have some analysis behind them. We should do that. That should be a public service to everyone at the network. We can explain your lazy cliches.
They've been outscored 37-3 in the fourth quarter, which seems like a pretty good way of quantifying don't know how to win. They're outscored 37-3. Outthrow penalties, you know, I mentioned conditioning, you know, blown coverages, mental mistakes. I think penalty also falls under, like getting a lot of, poorly timed penalties at the end.
What about,
you know, when we say discipline?
But I mean, that's the Raiders, which is a funny thing. No matter who the coach is, the Raiders are always in the top of penalties. Like, I remember that from being a player. Like, the Raiders, no matter who the coach, no matter who the players are, something about playing in Oakland, maybe it'll change when they go to Las Vegas, because that's a city that knows how to follow the rules.
Discipline there. Marshawn Lynch, by the way, has been incredible. He's quietly, like, really good this year. If that offensive line gets better under Tom Cable, I'll probably have to quit. Just quit it all. All right. Speaking of quitting, the Minnesota Vikings, what happened? So we got the Thursday night game. So, you know, I wanted to save this for last because if you're listening to this afterwards, then you won't be angry, I guess. But the Thursday night game it's still a really good game. It's kind of a trap game, in my opinion, for the Rams, who are obviously favored, but I want to talk to you about the Vikings first and how they completely imploded in Buffalo. We talked a little bit about Josh Allen and how good that Bills defense was, but going back and watching it, you know, I was watching for Allen, but I was also trying to figure out what happened. And really, it was just a complete perfect storm of everything going wrong for Minnesota, you know, and continuing to go wrong throughout the game. You know, we alluded to the fumbles that they didn't recover, some stuff like that, some weird penalties, but, the beginning of the game, it just got out of hand really quickly and they weren't able to recover in a way that makes me think, I'm not going to take too much from this, right? I'm not going to argue that, you know, this Vikings team is not as good as we thought they were. But I do have a couple of takeaways from that game in terms of long-term things to be concerned about. One is I completely underestimated how bad this offensive line was and how much that would affect the game. You know, the right tackle Riley, if he just got owned by Jerry Hughes, owned, and he's supposed to be good. Okay. Pat Elflein, the center, is coming back. That should help, especially against a Rams team where almost all of their pass rush is coming from the inside. They don't really have an outside pass rush, but it's going to be something that's going to bother them all season. It's going to cause problems for Kirk Cousins. So that's one. The other thing is, and this is, I wanted to hear your take on this. The defense, which is the vaunted Vikings defense, just completely blew coverage a few times. It wasn't just, you know, tackling or weird stuff. And it reminded me a little bit, Dominique, of the NFC Championship, where I was watching that defense and wondering, like, who is this secondary? I thought they're supposed to be good. So what do you think, you know, in terms of a good defense just having these total implosions, in particular the secondary, do you think that's something that's going to keep happening?
I'm more cautious to say that it's happened. They've been good more times than they haven't. But oftentimes, again, you know, I go to this route or this talking point often when we talk about secondary play, is the secondary is a lot like offensive receivers in that they are dependent on a lot of other things going well. So what could be the difference is that they are not getting the pressure in the way that they're used to, and that their coverages have always been like that, and they may not, and when things don't work out, it's because they aren't getting the pressure to pressure quarterbacks and make quarterbacks, not to say that their secondary isn't good, isn't talented, but sometimes their secondary is built for a system or a group of players are built for a system. And when one little, it's a very delicate balance. When one little thing is off, that can throw everything off and everyone can look terrible. So that is my best explanation for why randomly sometimes the Vikings are bad and or sloppy in the secondary is maybe they kind of are all the time. Maybe that's how they play and maybe that's part of what they do normally. But this week they couldn't get to the quarterback.
And obviously, Everson Griffin has been out, is going to be out. It's kind of unclear what's going on there, right? In terms of his situation off the field. But so that, it's interesting though. I haven't thought about that. I was just, as you were talking, trying to pull up some of the sack numbers for the Vikings defensive line to see, you know, how much they're affecting.
And pressures, like those things that changes the way that you have to play. And I think that oftentimes as a cornerback, if you are expecting, that's one of the more frustrating things is to have a blitz call that doesn't get home is because you are expecting certain things to happen because of the blitz. And if those things don't happen, then you're kind of out. Can I say?
Interesting. You just did. I guess the other thing I would add is it's still a pretty young defense across the board. So that could play into it as well. Cause don't you just remember watching that NFC Championship game and just like, what is, like, it was so Jekyll and Hyde. Yeah. I felt that way watching this game. But again, like I said, it did get out of control very early. And I do think, obviously, they're facing a Rams defense that'll be missing Aqib Talib, possibly Marcus Peters, and I mentioned earlier that the Rams don't really have an outside pass rush. I don't have the statistics in front of me, but they rank very low in sack ratio. I know that, so they are able to, they've got Sue and Donald and they are able to get a lot of pressure up the inside, but so having Elfline back will be really key for them on the inside there. But, I do think that especially if Peters isn't in, the Vikings have two, arguably the best wide receiver duo in the NFL. Right. So, when I said it felt trappy, kind of like my intro music, I guess,
<Well done. laughs>
such a bad joke. I just think I could just see this team after being so brutally humiliated coming in and doing surprisingly well against an injured, Rams defense.
Yeah, no, I think that's possible, but I think you mentioned the important part is that those two guys inside, Sue and Donald, playing against an offensive line that is not very good. Like I again feel like that is going to be the difference maker. I agree that the receivers will be better than whatever corners. If they put out two other corners, the receivers that the Vikings have will be better, but it's not going to matter if Kirk Cousins is getting his center and his guard put in his lap. And I think that is more likely to happen than not. So I think you're right. This game has trap potential, but it's in L.A. too. I think if I have to bet on this one, I'm still putting my money on the Rams pulling out the win.
Yeah, and we all know how incredible this Rams offense has been. What I didn't know, I guess, until I went back and I watched a couple of games, but I went back and watched the last one. Jared Goff has been really good.
Oh,
to
man.
The point where
I gotta eat crow on that one. We talk about crow eating opportunities is I have to eat crow on it because I was one like, all right, Jared Goff was terrible under Jeff Fisher. People said he was the worst and yeah. I was high on and I'm always high on how important a good coordinator is to making players seem better to build an offense around a guy. And I was really high on McVay saying that McVay is turning Goff into serviceable. But then I watched the games and I'm like, Goff's making some throws. Like he's a good quarterback. Yes. I was wrong.
Yeah.
I'm eating a crow.
It's not gimmies. So much
prepare
crow
to be
in week
it?
Three.
We bake it? Barbecue crow?
Yeah, you know what? It's week three. We could still be right about all of this.
Okay,
Josh
okay,
Allen
okay,
could
okay,
be
okay,
terrible.
Okay,
Jared Goff
okay,
could be a system
okay,
quarterback.
Spitting out the
I will
crow.
Say, though, he has looked really good. And the other thing that struck me is, Brandon Cooks is the new Sammy Watkins. He a lot better than Sammy Watkins. Okay. Like, it's very, it's kind of a perfect, perfect test in that you had him and he's out. Okay. Now I put him in. He just takes the top. I mean, what Sean McVay's been able to do on account of Brandon Cooks' presence now is unbelievable. I don't know, man. This offense is just crazy good. And that's what makes it so hard because they strain together these long drives and, they're just so, undeniably at this point to me the best team in the NFL.
Chiefs or Rams for offense? You take one. You can only have one. Which offense do you want?
Ooh.
It's not that hard. Chiefs. Yeah, it's not that hard. Chiefs.
Yeah. What do you mean? Why is it not that hard?
Well, I have a thing for Andy Reid, so I'm a little biased, but Chiefs have, I guess, like, playmakers at every position. Not that the Rams don't, but I think the Chiefs playmakers are better than the Rams playmakers. And I also think the Chiefs quarterback is better than the Rams quarterback. The difference that the Rams have is a serviceable running game. I think they average like more than a yard more an attempt running the ball than the Chiefs do. So a serviceable running game is important. That's nice to have in football. But you know what's even better is a guy who can throw the ball 80 yards and a couple guys who can run under it, which is kind of what the Chiefs do. And their ability to do that on first and second down terrifies whoever they're playing against, and it opens everything else up. And I love the Chiefs.
Now imagine if, so the Chiefs, this week's DVOA ratings came out. The Chiefs, I believe, are, you know, the best in offense and absolute worst in defense.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Now, the Rams are, I don't know, probably second or third or something in offense, and I think in the top five in defense as well. So I just don't think there's, I completely made up those numbers, by the way.
That's fine.
I just don't think any other team in the NFL comes close right now.
Like, yeah,
who's the second best team? The Chiefs? A team with the worst defense in the NFL be the second best team?
So
in the
here
NFL?
We are. There are three phases to the game of football, Mina Khan.
Chiefs special teams, by the way. Woof woof.
Oh, their special teams is good. The Chiefs special teams is fantastic.
That was a positive woof woof.
Oh, I don't know.
Not like
I thought
a
it
was. Woof.
Oh, okay, yeah. Right, my bad. I didn't hear the proper inflection. Yeah. Let's try it again. Chiefs special teams is.
Woof woof.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I wish I didn't say it like that. That was so creepy. I didn't like that at all.
They are phenomenal on special teams. And so that field position matters. It matters quite a bit. So I'm going to go ahead and say that third phase of the game, they're the best. I think I'll check out the stats, but I would argue that they are the best special teams in the NFL right now. So you put together best special teams with best offense, maybe you don't have to be that great on defense.
Well, there's that great, and then there's worse in the NFL. But it's week three. Or it's week four now, right? Week four. Yeah, this is week four. All right. So the Rams are the best team, and no one else is very good.
We're done. See you next week.
Wait, no. I have one more. I have a segment.
So I'm going to be back next week, though.
You'll be back at some point. I hope. Please come back. This is a segment that we used to do, but we often disagreed about the name of the segment. And now, because I am in control, I gave it the name that I always wanted to give. It is just me asking some rapid fire questions to you.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
Thanks, Stu. Dinks and Dunks, awesome. People.
Oh, man.
Question number one. Why don't you like my dog?
Me? I love Linus. Linus is a phenomenal little...
Stop
lying.
I love him.
Like, he's the best.
You hear how many decibels
really
your voice just... I love Linus.
Linus is phenomenal. He's a cute guy.
Second question. Is the reason you don't like my dog because you remember his name, but I always have trouble remembering your kids' names? There are so many of them.
It's only
their
three.
Names
it's not that many.
They're
it's
so
only three,
complicated.
And they're not that complicated.
They're
complicated. Just because you don't, I mean, there's just a couple extra syllables. Just because your name is only four letters doesn't mean that a name with more than four letters is complicated. The kids are not quite Linus. I understand. They don't hold the same place in your heart, but I love Linus. It's okay. It doesn't bother me that you hate
Question
children.
Three.
Okay.
Question three. What's the last book you read?
Red Rising. Fiction. I'm on book three of the Red Rising trilogy. It's really an awesome kind of, I'm not normally a sci-fi type of guy, but it's a space opera. Pretty fantastic. I'm about 100 pages away from finishing the third book of the series. You should read it.
Whoa.
You might like it.
Is it like those, so it's a series. I used to like sci-fi series when I was a kid. I read all those, I don't want to admit this here, but I just already started to admit it. I read all those dragon books. They're called Dragon Riders.
Yeah, never heard of it. I don't know. Yeah, I'm new to sci-fi, but it does feel pretty lame to say that I'm reading, because all the people who are like, oh, I've read all the Game of Thrones before Game of Thrones come out, like, I don't respect you. I'm now currently that person with Red Rising.
What about the ones with the mouse, like Redwall? Do you remember those?
Mouse?
It was like a children's fantasy series with like a mouse. And,
Nah, I grew up playing football. I ain't reading no books.
Question number three, who would win in a fight, Tim or Matt Hasselbeck?
You know
I love Matt Hasselbeck.
Yeah, Matt
okay,
will
good.
Win.
Right answer.
Hands down. Yeah, it's not even close.
Yeah. I'm waiting for that to get back to him, because on the Levitard show the other day, they were asking me about watching the games in the war room, and I talked about how I would just creepily stare at Matt Hasselbeck from like across the room. At some point, he's going to hear that, right? I don't know. He's
I'll
probably listening.
Some.
He's going to listen
I'll
to this, right?
Know.
You think he's subscribed?
Yeah.
Oh, look who has Matt Hasselbeck's number.
I mean, he works at it. We worked together at the Players Association for a long time. I know Matt. He's a good dude.
Ooh.
Like, come on. So, if we're going to talk about, whose Rolodex is more impressive. Like, I mean, don't you got Aaron Rodgers in yours? Like, why don't you text him and tell him to subscribe? Maybe you could teach him something about football.
Last question. If you were a football team, what would be? I know you saw Gritty, right? By the way, Gritty, the
Flyers
mascot.
Yeah, I did see Gritty.
Are you pro or anti Gritty?
I'm pro Gritty. Like, it seems it's okay, good. It's interesting.
It's the right answer. How would you? Okay, I don't know how people are anti Gritty. As I was looking at Gritty, I was thinking, like, football mascots suck compared to, like, there's no, like, real wacky, like, the Flyer, you know, the Fanatic or Gritty. Someone needs to change the game. So anyways,
yeah, but Gritty has a personality that's different than other mascots, which is why I like Gritty. Like, I think
sassy.
Yeah, his sassy personality matches his weird look. Most mascots are like mascots for little kids. Gritty seems like a mascot for teens and adults.
Can you name a single NFL mascot?
There was a horse in Denver. I think his name was Thunder or something. Like a woman used to ride out on a white horse.
No, maybe. That's the animal mascot though. Like a,
oh, you mean, yeah, like
that
a,
was like a live animal.
Like a human, like, in a costume?
Like the Gritty equivalent of an NFL. Nah. Can you give the nickname of a?
No, I don't know. Probably not.
That's terrible.
The only one I know is Seattle's.
Can you give it? Oh, okay.
You don't know Rory? The Lions
one? Who's Rory?
Well, it's Rory.
Rory is the Lions mascot. Or Blue, the Colts mascot.
What is
that's
wrong?
Our producer, Tarika, who is a Colts fan.
And a creep, obviously, and just stalking mascots.
Who also gave me the most fire NFL take I've ever heard, but I'm going to wait to entice people to keep listening. Truly the most fire, like, and I hear a lot of really crazy NFL takes. The first time I met her in person, she gave me, I'm still, like, even thinking about it gives me the chills. It was so fire.
That's the tease. I need to know. You can tell me off air. I need to know before. I can't wait till next week.
It's hot, too.
All right. Just tell him. Tarika, just tell him.
I'll tell him off air.
Okay. All right. I can't wait.
She's embarrassed of it. No, you got to own it.
Are you ashamed of your take?
I am absolutely not ashamed of this take. This take is good. I believe.
Just put it out there.
Aaron Rodgers is a systematic quarterback.
And we're out.